Hello and welcome to another episode of the Rethink Energy podcast. My name is Bogdan Afremita and I'm the editor of Rethink Energy, which is a weekly publication analyzing the latest trends and developments in the world of renewable energy. Today with me I have Andrew Swantonar, who's covering solar and wind for the most part for us. Hello, Andrew.
Hello.
In this week's episode, we will discuss two of the items that we published the day before in this week's publication. The first one is a piece that Andrés wrote on the state of the US grid storage industry, which he says will double in 2024. And then we'll dive a bit into the nuclear industry and talk about how a potential ban from the US on Russian enriched uranium exports may throw a spanner in the works in the supply chain world of nuclear. But first, Andrés, walk us through why the U.S. grid storage industry will double in 2024 alone.
Well, the actual news is just based on some forecasts and data from the Energy Information Administration in the U.S. case and industry associations in the European case from California, also from China. Just industry news there, but it follows on from what we've seen. So basically, at the end of 2023, the US had 14.3 gigawatts of battery storage on its grid, mostly in California, and most of that's utility scale, incidentally. It's 15.5 gigawatts, big difference. And they're going to add 14.3 this year. So almost as much in 1 year as they've ever added up to this point. And last year, they only added 6 gigawatts. So in terms of annual installations, the pace of the industry is actually more than doubling in the US, and the total scale of cumulative installations is also almost doubling. In China, it's basically the same story. Roughly speaking, they installed 10 gigawatts of batteries in 2022, followed by over 20 gigawatts last year. And then this year, it's looking like between 30 and 40 gigawatts. So again, almost doubling the installation pace, pretty much doubling the cumulative amount. Europe, it's a little bit less drastic in terms of growth rates because we accumulated a bit more previously than those other places. But we've got 7 gigawatts, roughly speaking, each expected for Germany, Italy, and the UK. And that's 3/4 of the European total. So those are the three national markets that are the most advanced. So really what we're looking at is battery energy storage that's grid connected, going from not really being a full-scale industry to being a full-scale industry. Because if you look at government statistics for generation capacity of really all types, or renewables, if you're just looking at renewables, and this is, of course, something I do, you see the wind, you see the solar, you don't really see the batteries. In some cases now, that's beginning to change, or if it hasn't yet, it soon will. Basically, we're going from the industry not really existing 2 years ago at any significant scale to now it's a really significant fraction. Like China, if they install, 40 gigawatts this year? Well, their solar installations, and this is mostly, of course, serving solar. Their solar installations this year are only going to be about 240 gigawatts. So it's already 1/6 the size of the solar industry in terms of nominal wattage. And again, in America, what is it they're looking at? 14 gigawatts this year in batteries. That's only that's fully 1/3 of the scale of wattage for solar, for photovoltaics. So this is just a new element. It was always going to happen, and this is the year that it really crosses the threshold into being almost as big as the other ones, I would say. And another reason that we kind of miss out on batteries a little bit is because it's kind of overshadowed by the sheer scale of electric vehicle batteries, of course. So I haven't really looked into the supply chain for stationary battery storage because it kind of feels a bit pointless compared to the enormous scale of the EV industry that Connor covers so well.
Last week, I came across one of those daily generation graphs from the state of California. And you mentioned California is the leader in battery energy storage in the U.S. And I think is for the first time, generation from battery stored energy was the larger contributor to the electricity mix at a certain point in the day.
Oh, yes, I can. Well, I love California as an example because everyone can very easily see this actually. I invite our listeners to maybe try it themselves if they're at a computer. Just go to caiso, queso.com, and you can click through onto the supply tab and scroll down, and there's a big, beautiful graph. And actually, yesterday, the 8th of May, now that you mention it, at about 7:30 p.m., they had 6.6 gigawatts instantaneous coming out of batteries. This is just after the sun goes down. And natural gas was only slightly larger at 7 gigawatts. Now, the batteries do then decline rather swiftly. They sort of go to nothing by midnight, actually. That's often what happens with my home battery, too. And the natural gas, on the other hand, continues basically throughout the night at half that previously mentioned level. But in terms of prices, those few hours that the batteries are covering very thoroughly through to about from like 7 till 10, those are the by far the highest priced hours. Those are the peak hours. So this is really good stuff from a financial and economic perspective. But just looking at the graph, they could probably stand to install one, two, about eight times as much batteries, and then they could run it throughout the night if they had enough solar.
Yeah, so in the case of the US again, why is California leading the line? Is it a case of policy? What can the other states do?
Oh, it's probably policy. I mean, you look at the other two big states, Florida and Texas. To put it crudely, they're Republicans. So I think it's fair to say that California has put more pressure on gas. I mean, it's easier said than done. So they still have a lot, including imports from Arizona. But they put more pressure on gas. They've decommissioned either gas or coal in the past few years. I forget which it was. I mean, I don't see any. There's no coal on this graph anymore, except probably from Arizona again. And they also decommissioned a nuclear fleet in California. Is there any? They still have some nuclear here. They've got 1 gigawatt of nuclear left, it would appear. So that's really why they got rid of a lot of the conventional old stuff. Oh, and they're also, I think the old net metering system, I mean, that's defined on a state-by-state basis. So I think it's fair to assume that it was disproportionately generous in California. Obviously, the natural conditions are probably better in California even than in Texas. Florida is a bit more humid, so it'd be a bit worse. So that's really why the net metering system has been it's been what is it reformed cuts by 80% is the less polite way to put it, but that was only very recent. So they do have a lot of rooftop solar.
You mentioned nuclear, and I think this is a good time to switch to our second item of the day, which is a story I wrote about a couple of things nuclear. But really, the center of the problem, I was mentioning an upcoming US bill, which is waiting to be passed into a law, which will effectively ban imports of Russian-enriched uranium. When I dug deeper into sort of the scale of the supply chain and what Russia is responsible to and what the balance is in the nuclear sector, Russia is responsible for about 40% of the total production capacity of enriched uranium. That comes up to about $2 billion in annual revenue for Russia. Not to say that all of this enriched uranium is going to the U.S., but a relatively large part would be. So with this new ban, obviously Russia's a huge proportion of Russia's 2 billion in exports would be placed in doubt. The Department of Energy, the U.S. Department of Energy, has a sort of a loophole included in the bill, and it allowed itself the option to sort of waive the ban momentarily up until 2028, and to some degree, if the US doesn't find an alternative. But the way we see, there probably will be plenty of alternatives. I mean, just yesterday, it was actually after I wrote the article that I came across the news, and then I sneakily included it at the bottom right before we published the article and the issue. The UK government is allocating £196 million to construct an uranium enrichment facility to produce up to 10 tons of the fuel by 2031. So things are moving. Ukraine also expressed interest to be willing to take over Russia with investment into uranium enrichment facilities. Some other countries in Europe also have decent facilities. You're looking at France, Germany, and the Netherlands as and the UK, primarily as hot centers for uranium enrichment. China has a bit, and the US has a bit, but probably not enough to sustain the somewhat projected growth of nuclear. Like I mentioned in the article, we don't expect nuclear to be ramping up to the sort of a beat of wind and solar installations, but
The country with that's most committed to nuclear as its energy grid strategy is actually Russia itself. Although for now, the US does appear to have actually more nominal capacity than China and Russia combined. So Russia's like 30 gigawatts, China's 50 gigawatts, US is 100 gigawatts, roughly speaking. That's off the top of my head. So for the US to start messing with where it buys from, it's definitely a major market. It might be what, 40% of global demand at a guess. Now, something that we didn't put in this article because I actually looked it up, but I didn't properly source it and sort it out in time for the weekly issue, is the issue of pre-enrichment. So you mine the uranium. Now, before you put it through the actual enrichment process, again, I'm not an expert on it yet, but you put it through a hexafluoride conversion process, I think it was. And apparently, that is highly it's more highly focused in certain countries than the enrichment processes. So I believe Russia has 40% of that, and the other three facilities for that worldwide are in Canada and France. So no problem there in terms of sanctions and China. So, but the Russian one is the biggest. So that kind of sounds a bit like the solar industry, where the raw material of polysilicon is not even the most Eastern-dominated part. It's actually the first refinement step of ingot production that is the most focused into China, or in this case, Russia, probably for the same reason, probably because hexafluoride conversion is, I mean, it sounds like an energy-intensive chemical process.
I mean, it probably is. And like I mentioned, the UK investment example, they want to build that enrichment facility by 2031. So that's 6 years away. That's actually 7 years away.
Now, other parts of British energy strategy also tend to move fairly slowly at times, but with nuclear, I sort of feel sorry for it. I quite like nuclear to do well, but I just hear these numbers of, oh, it'll happen in a decade. And then I think about everything that's happening with the renewables, like the batteries, for example. And a big case in favor of nuclear was that it doesn't stop working when the wind isn't blowing or the sun goes down. But then wind and solar have the solution of batteries. And we've just talked about the battery industry, specific the grid connected battery industry, not EVs, doubling in 1 year, having doubled the year before that as well, probably. And this week also saw like the Chinese expanding beyond lithium. Lithium is a bit sort of suited more to short term or like a couple of hours at most. So if you want to go all the way, and this is the next thing that a battery advocate might argue, you'd need longer battery durations. Well, we've got a 5 gigawatt iron chromium liquid flow battery and a 10 gigawatt zinc bromine factory brought online or progressed otherwise in China this week. Now, Connor could confirm if he were on this week, but I'm pretty sure those are both the types of batteries that are well suited to extending their duration to 8 hours and beyond. Anyway, sorry, I'm ranting. Go ahead.
I mean, on top of that, you also have the prospect of hydrogen as a long duration
Yes.
energy storage system. So there's plenty of options. And like you mentioned, batteries are dropping in cost, hydrogen is expected to drop in cost. And whilst, all that is happening, nuclear is having cost problems. And like you mentioned, very true, it takes a very long time to build. Even the new technologies, right? I was talking to Copenhagen Atomics a couple of months ago. They're working on a thorium-based SMR small modular reactor, and they're really looking to scale up to sort of have a factory able to produce those SMRs well into the 2030s. And by then you sort of ask the question, okay, if you only have a factory in mid-2030s capable of producing, maybe I don't remember the number off my head, but it was in the sort of a single digit gigawatts per year sort of a value, then you sort of have to ask the question, at what point can this become a couple hundred gigawatts a year sector that can actually move the needle on decarbonization?
Well, you basically need to build a nuclear plant every couple of years in your national market to have the available expertise, to have the available supply chains for various components. I saw someone on LinkedIn saying that, oh, the US has a big nuclear industry, and yet it has these lead times of over a decade for nuclear. So clearly, nuclear sucks. But that's wrong because the US does have a really old, it's got a huge nuclear fleet that's all really old. They've only built like three reactors in the past 30 years. So, of course, they take a decade or more and are very expensive because they're doing everything from scratch each time, which is just wrong. It's not how you should do it.
Yes, perhaps this is like you said, doesn't play in the advantage of the sector because we often talk about, when we talk about nuclear, we talk about old nuclear and new nuclear, right? You have nuclear that either gets decommissioned or refurbished, also at a pretty high cost, or you have new nuclear, which is smaller in capacity and somehow more expensive. But those are, new supply chains need to be set in place, new manufacturing processes they need to optimize. So you're essentially looking at nuclear 2.0, which also needs to go through economies of scale like nuclear 1.0 went. It's apples and oranges when you compare nuclear with wind or solar or other renewables.
For the impression that I've got from reading about nuclear, not even for this job, just for fun recently, is that modular nuclear is almost a contradiction in terms. Like there's still a minimum size, and the sort of the advantage, the whole advantage of nuclear is this possibility to build it to be incredibly powerful and 4 gigawatts a piece. Like the that I think it's the Energodar nuclear plant that Russia's captured just south of the Dnieper. It's a 5.7 gigawatt power plant that has low fuel costs and it just runs and runs forever. It's just amazingly powerful compared to like 5.7 gigawatts of solar that runs 20% of the time, and you need all these batteries, and it's split across rooftops and all over the place. So really, what you would really want with nuclear is don't even build a new nuclear industry. Look to the people who still have one that runs constantly, but unfortunately, that's a Russian, so I guess we're not doing that.
To the point that you made, perhaps, bigger is not always better, right? We see, in the wind sector, you have wind turbines that are, even discussion of what, 25 megawatts. So there's just one turbine capable of producing 25 megawatts of power. But then there's associated sort of a maintenance issues with that. And so there's benefits and drawbacks, right? Perhaps, if you look at solar, you have those like one module is what sort of power rating is one module, Andres?
One module is these days up to, well, for a utility scale big one, it's about 700 watts. So 0.7 kilowatts.
So crumbs compared to 25 megawatts per
Well, it's kind of a
turbine.
philosophical question, though. What's easier? The really complex maintenance of a nuclear plant, but you only need to maintain one? Or on the other hand, you have the incredibly simple solar module that you just, it's just a block of silicon and glass. Like even most of the cost, even a large fraction of the cost now is literally glass. That's how sort of basic these things, glass and plastic and aluminium, and there's still some technological costs in there, but and you just leave it there for 30 years and it just sits there and works. But you have to have, I mean, how many for a gigawatt? That would be 1.5 million modules, so it's a lot more in terms of manpower. And the inverters need to be replaced, and there is also perhaps the Chinese example. The Chinese are kind of a neutral objective party, perhaps, because they do have the free access to Rosatom expertise. They also have their own national nuclear expertise. They consistently build nuclear reactors, but they're investing in everything else, and really they're investing in everything else a bit more than they're investing in their nuclear. So that seems like in what you might consider objective conditions, nuclear actually isn't that cost competitive. And we also had, we do have these various nuclear reactors being proposed and even accepted in places like Turkey or Kazakhstan. Actually, they have one under consideration, and but one was cancelled in Vietnam. And the Westinghouse reactors have had a lot of issues. Although I just blame that on the strategy not going from pilot phase to full scale industry yet, personally. It's just learning pains, in my opinion. But it's debatable whether nuclear is cost effective in the end. But when you're talking about maintenance costs and wind turbine sizes, like these absurd 25 megawatt monsters they're preparing the equipment supply chains for now in China, I suspect it's easier to maintain one 25 megawatt turbine than a 5 megawatt, than five of 5 megawatt turbines, if that makes sense, especially since they still break anyway. So what difference does this Kazakhstan sanctions? Well, they're not Kazakhstan sanctions, are they? They're sanctions on Russia, and then we're looking at Kazatomprom's figures, and we're just using that as a way to examine the situation. So what's our verdict on these American sanctions? Are they really going to change things, or is there enough room to go to other people's hexafluoride conversion, other people's enrichment? And so there's workarounds. So Russia will be out for $2 billion, and America's nuclear fleet won't be inconvenienced, especially since they have a waiver anyway.
It certainly looks that way. Yeah, they do have a waiver just in case. Look, like I said in the article, there's plenty of other facilities around. There's people building new facilities, so people are aware of this issue and they're sort of jumping to the opportunity to assimilate market share when it comes to the supply chain of enriched uranium. But another important point is we don't actually believe nuclear will, like we talked about just now in this podcast. There's so many things that are going against nuclear. We don't actually believe nuclear will gather any sort of significant pace when it comes to new installations. So there's not going to be, we don't expect to be an incredible demand of enriched uranium. And then perhaps by the time there might be an increased demand, there will be additional capacity coming online in other parts of the world. So sort of a one to keep an eye on.
So basically, we've messed with the uranium supply a bit, but the demand is very stagnant, basically. And also the only thing that's slower than getting on an online new uranium mining and conversion and enrichment processes is building a new nuclear plant. So the new supply could actually be brought online just as fast as the new demand, which is not the case with like silver mining or copper mining or something like that.
But anyway, that's enough rambling on the topic of nuclear. Let's move on to a couple of shorts that we covered in our renewables orders this week, or worth noting sections. I see I added one about Plug Power, a PEM electrolyzer manufacturer from the US, has signed a preliminary deal with Australian developer AGA to supply 3 gigawatts of PEM electrolyzers starting from 2027. So from 2027, because AGA wants to produce above 900,000 tons of green ammonia per year from 2027. So we're sort of seeing the electrolyzer pipeline starting to drip a bit and get some hefty orders in, and the needle starts to move for all those hydrogen doubters out there.
I'd assume the global electrolyzer installation rate worldwide is still well below a gigawatt, right?
No, there's more than a gigawatt of electrolyzers active at the moment.
But per year, is it over 1 gigawatt per year yet?
Per year install rate, probably, yeah. Just about, well, it's hard to, most of the announcements these days are sort of well into the future, but there's a lot of pilots happening.
And the pilots are like on the 50 megawatt to 100 megawatt scale, so it doesn't take too many to create that demand.
Yeah, essentially, essentially.
So this little news piece I put together about batteries doubling twice in 2 years sequentially, and now it's a major industry. We can write that in like 5 years, maybe, looking at this announcement, for example.
What for electrolyzers?
For hydrogen, yeah.
Probably before that, to be honest. I mean, it's 24 now. There's gonna be, we expect sort of an S curve investment into the hydrogen market. So once it's gonna take off really well. There's a lot of agreements being inked with sort of off takers of gray hydrogen today. So you've got a secure source of demand. So the supply is in great demand as well these days. Hence why those deals are being inked.
I saw some big new ones in China as well, but People can read the order list for that.
Okay, so then seems like a good good point to wrap up the episode. Thank you everyone for tuning in and listening to us. Just a reminder, you can access all of the topics and more that we discussed today in our weekly publication. If you go to rethinkresearch.biz and you click on Energy, then Weekly Analysis, and under Forecast and Data, you can find our reports, which again dive even deeper into the topics, some of the topics that we discussed. Thank you for tuning in, and hopefully we'll see you next week. Bye for now.